Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to my program, The Michael Cutler Hour. Appropriately enough, my name is Michael Cutler. I hope you guys all had a terrific week. It's been an exciting week for America, debate number two between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. And I also am back taping at talkborder.com. I'll get to my websites in a minute. But it's been an amazing week. I certainly think that the debate that we saw this week was interesting, and we'll get to that also momentarily. But let me just start out by reminding you that I am Michael Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. Today, those functions have been taken over by an agency known as DHS. You may not know this, but I have come to call DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender, for a bunch of reasons, and none of them good. You know, I have good reasons for feeling that way, but certainly it's not good for America. In the wake of the 9/11 attacks, as a New Yorker, the ashes landed on my home. My neighbors were killed. I will never forget that night. The ashes strewn all over my hometown. My neighbors out on the streets, sitting on sidewalks, crying, wailing, not knowing where their husbands or their wives, their children, their parents, their siblings, their best friends were. Cars driving by with American flags hanging from them. And everywhere you went, the photographs of the victims, and no one knew where they were. And many of their remains have yet to be found. And in some cases, all that have been returned to families are specks of what had been the bodies of their loved ones. I can't forget that event 11 years ago. And I can't forget that it happened because our federal government failed to do what it was supposed to do, secure our borders and enforce our immigration laws. And while the open borders crowd, the folks I've come to call the immigration anarchists, are quick to say, well, those aliens were not illegally present in the United States, in point of fact, they were. They obtained their visas to come here by deception and by fraud. They lied to the inspectors who admitted them at ports of entry. And there's an interesting piece of immigration law that most folks don't know, but it says that an alien who is excludable at entry, who should have been kept out in the first place, becomes deportable any time thereafter. And let's remember why we have immigration laws, for two fundamental, easy-to-understand purposes: to protect American lives and to protect American jobs. And I did a congressional hearing as a witness back on May 20th, 1997, about visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud because of what happened in 1993 when America was attacked twice on its own soil. So on 9/11, it seemed to me that the lessons that should have been learned back 8 years earlier, 1993, were not learned by the Clinton administration, and metaphorically and literally, that is what left the door open to the horrific events of September 11th, 2001. And in my view, folks, that door has never been wider open than it is today. So that's why I'm here. That's what I have been doing for the last 11 years. I've done a whole bunch of congressional hearings. I've arrested terrorists and drug dealers in my career as an agent, which spans some 30 years. But if you'd like to read more about my career, if you're not familiar with me, want to learn a little bit about me, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. That's one word, michaelcutler.net. Two other terrific websites I would love for you to go visit. One of them is TalkBorder. That's one word, TalkBorder, TalkBorder.com, where I conduct interviews and write commentaries of people that are worth listening to. Among the people that I have interviewed is Lou Barletta, congressman of Pennsylvania in the U.S. House of Representatives. He had been the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. I was his final witness when he was sued for daring to do the common sense, decent thing of enact ordinances in his town of Hazleton to prevent illegal aliens from setting up shop and committing crime. And let's face this. This isn't about vilifying immigrants. My own mother was an immigrant. came here from Poland ahead of the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother who perished in the Holocaust. But it's about making certain that when people come to America, they do so in accordance with those important laws that are designed to keep out the criminals and the terrorists and the people who would take the jobs that Americans desperately need, especially now. Boy, it's remarkable. We hear about what the unemployment rate is, 8% or whatever. You know, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. Those numbers do not include people who are underemployed. Those figures do not include people who have given up looking for work. Right now, it's estimated that 1 in 6 Americans are living below the poverty level. 1 in 4 American children, 1 in 4 American children are now living below the poverty level. Charity, folks, begins at home. So I've been doing those interviews. Lou Barletta and others have been on that website. There'll be more coming. I've got an exciting interview lined up for next week. Can't wait to do that again. It'll be a repeat visitor, but you'll have to go to the website to find out who's coming on to talk about terrorism and the threats that America faces. But before we get too far away from it, I want to give you the third website that I think is really important for you to visit. That website is capsweb.org. Let me repeat it, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. That organization, Californians for Population Stabilization, is headquartered in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Beautiful place to visit. I've been there a number of times. It's always a treat to be there on the West Coast. Great friends, great climate, wonderful place. And here I am on the East Coast, but I work closely with them, write lots of commentaries for them. We're going to talk about a couple of those commentaries in a little bit. And I'm also going to have a guest on with me today. I'm expecting Mark Hager to be joining me. Mark is the co-producer of a documentary, yet another one that I'm in. This one is called Invasion, and I'm really excited about this particular documentary because what Mark has done is to put together a wonderful film, I believe. I know they're in final editing, but I know that he's, as a history professor, is a nitpicker where facts are concerned. And so I know this is going to be a good film. I'm happy to be in it. It's called Invasion, Freedom Under Fire 2, Part 2. And he's out of North Carolina. In fact, I'll be joining him and the other folks in North Carolina next week at this time. So I won't be on this program next week, so you'll know in advance. I will try to get you a terrific guest host if possible. But I'm going to be in North Carolina because they're going to do the initial screening, the premiere, as it were, a week from tomorrow, a week from Saturday. So I'm certainly excited about the prospect of heading to North Carolina one more time. Always happy to get down there. Great place, great people. And this film is super important. But again, so please go to capsweb.org. And while we talk about commentaries that I have written for them, let me start out by telling you about one of them. And this commentary that I wrote for CAPS is called Immigration and the Name Game. And the incredible story here is that apparently the Huffington Post ran an article about how the Spanish news organizations are now angry that the New York Times dared use the term illegal immigrant. God forbid you should use the word alien these days. And you know, I've made the point before, but I'm going to quickly make this point again. The term alien is not a pejorative, not at all. It's not an insult. It's not like the N-word, which is despicable. Nothing like that. It's not a slur. The legal definition, because this is a legal term and it's found in the Immigration and Nationality Act repeatedly, because what it means is simply any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. Well, goodness, where is the insult in saying an alien is any person not a citizen or national of the United States? There are over 300 million people on this planet, in the United States, who are citizens. And there's over 7 billion people on the planet. So potentially there are over 6.5 billion aliens should everybody show up one day who wasn't the citizen. And when we as Americans travel to other countries, they will be quick to remind you that in their country, we become aliens because we're not citizens. This is a mutually accepted way of describing a foreign national present in a country who is not a citizen of that country. No insult. It's accurate. It's concise. It paints a clear picture. And if your goal is to obfuscate the issue, then the first order of business is to obfuscate the language. Lay down a smokescreen, as it were. And the smokescreen that we hear about is how, oh my God, they are insulting people by calling them aliens. Nothing could be further from the truth. In Mexico, because Spanish is the national language, would that we had a national language in America. Again, not because of any disdain for foreign nationals or foreign cultures. And I think it's great to learn many foreign languages. As a kid, I grew up, Yiddish was basically a second language in my family. But the idea is that it's language that is the mortar that holds a society together. If we can't speak to one another, if we can't communicate with one another, then goodness gracious, we cannot do business with each other, and then mistrusts develop, and it's a very unwholesome situation. You wind up with a Tower of Babel. But in Mexico, in any event, the term that they use is extranjero. And extranjero is the same as alien or foreigner. And believe me, there is no reluctance in Mexico to use that term. So here was this article in the Huffington Post about how the Spanish language publications are very upset that the New York Times, and now realize that the New York Times is hardly a conservative paper, a paper that opposes immigration. You know, they want illegal immigration. The New York Times is a very liberal, and I shouldn't even say liberal, I would probably have to say almost anti-American attitude, because the immigration laws are neither Democrat nor Republican, liberal nor conservative. It's just about protecting American lives and American jobs. So to me, it's rather astonishing that this actually goes on in this day and age, that we're waging battles with folks over something as foolish as accurate terminology. You cannot make this stuff up. And you know, by the way, if you want to talk about language and propaganda, and that was what I talked about a little bit, is the misuse of language to create misleading false impressions. And you've seen it with the DREAM Act, by the way. President Obama said, well, this is about helping the children. I just listened to Obama's wife on the campaign trail. Same deal. Vote for my husband. Vote for Barack, because he's going to help these children, these immigrant children, go to sleep at night knowing they won't be deported. Look, nobody wants to run around deporting children. But if you look at this piece of nonsense that he calls prosecutorial discretion, deferred action, that will likely involve millions, not the 800,000 he originally claimed on June 15th, the age cutoff is 31. You could be up to 31 years of age and participate in this program. So we have the misuse of the word child, young person, young kid. These are all the words that the president used to describe what will potentially be a population of millions of illegal aliens who will be given authorization to work for at least 2 years. And I can assure you that there is no integrity to the program. You may not know this, but there will be no face-to-face interviews. This will simply be done on paper. People will submit an application, and they will get employment authorization under any name that they claim they are. Now, you should know that a lot of the terror watch lists are purely name-based without any biometrics. Now, if you are a terrorist and you could get a brand new, what they call in law enforcement and immigration, a breeder document, such as an official immigration identity document in a false name, you could then get a driver's license in a false name. You can get a Social Security card in a false name. You can get credit cards. You can get a job. You can get a job, if not in a place that has national security implications, a place that has critical infrastructure implications. Look at what is happening now with that pharmaceutical company that produced medications that were injected into folks, and the result is fungal meningitis. Well, you know, anytime, and you see how we're all linked together. if anything goes wrong in a drug processing plant or a food processing plant, and lots of people ingest, eat, or are inoculated with, or whatever, anything, whether it's food or a drug, the potential is there that if somebody had malintention, that they could poison a lot of people. We have lots of illegal aliens working in the meatpacking industries and other such industries. It gives me cause for pause. It makes me worry about terrorists who might want to do harm to us. It's not only about airplanes. You know, we go through this whole routine at airports, and I do a lot of flying. I certainly don't want to wind up with a seat on a de facto cruise missile. But it's not only airplanes that pose a threat. And in fact, this past week, we just saw in New York City where we had an attempted bombing. It was fortunately a sting operation where we saw a citizen of Bangladesh, 21 years of age, thinking that he was putting together a bomb that he was going to use. Fortunately, he wound up making contact with not terrorists or bad guys, but an FBI informant and an FBI agent. And the result of that was that, thank God, they were able to prevent the attack or prevent him from getting to meet with people who could have carried out the attack. But this guy, Qazi Mohammed Rezwanul Hassan Nafis, interestingly enough, was admitted into the United States as a student. He was going to go to a university in Missouri, and news reports are somewhat in conflict as to whether or not he simply stopped attending school or if he applied to change schools to go to an ESL school, English as a Second Language school, but made his way to New York. And according to the FBI affidavits and the other materials that have been in the media, his ultimate goal wasn't to study, but to do destruction in the United States. And in order to facilitate that entry, what he did was to get a student visa. His father claims that he shelled out his life savings to have his son come to America. And instead of pursuing his dreams, he wanted to create for America and Americans a nightmare by blowing up a huge bomb, a 1,000-pound bomb, next to the Federal Reserve Building in Lower Manhattan. I can tell you I've walked by that bank building many times. It was in one of Bruce Willis's Die Hard films. In fact, there's a gold repository in the basement, and that was, if you remember, the topic, I think it was of the second of the Die Hard movies. That is a very congested part of the city. You can barely walk on the sidewalk on a busy day. And this is where this guy wanted to set off a 1,000-pound high-yield explosive bomb that he thought would be identical with the bomb used in the first bombing at the World Trade Center in 93, which almost brought one of the towers down sideways. I don't even want to begin to imagine what the casualty count would have or could have been if, in fact, he had successfully carried out that bombing. Now, there's going to be a lot of focus on why he was given a student visa. But what we have yet to hear in the news media, and I hope that that will change, is how immigration law enforcement ignores people once they enter the United States. Every year, I believe the figure is that we admit on the order of 150 million visitors, non-immigrant visitors, into the United States. Every year, I saw a statistic that over 400,000 students are admitted into the United States. The General Accountability Office did a study about that, and in fact, a couple of these GAO reports also served as the basis for what I wrote for CAPS. One of the articles, let me read it, it's kind of an unwieldy title, bear with me, folks. GAO Report on General Aviation Security. TSA's process for ensuring foreign flight students do not pose a security risk has weaknesses. I just love how they try to understate the problem. Let me read it again. GAO report on General Aviation Security -TSA's process for ensuring that foreign flight students do not pose a security risk has weaknesses. Boy, that should make you feel wonderful. And if you look at the articles that are out there, in one article they noted that 27 individuals who were deemed to be a threat to national security had aviation licenses. they found that there were thousands of people with Social Security numbers and names didn't match. So here we are, 11 years after 9/11. Airlines are the big deal. They strip search 85-year-old women and pat down 4-year-old little girls who run back for another hug from grandma. Boy, we're tough on this deal, but we have individuals flying airplanes in the airspaces around our country, and some of them potentially could be terrorists, and they have pilot's licenses. Absolutely astonishing. And then there was another brilliant article that came out, and the title for this one was that problems still abound in the student visa program. And they talked about just how bad it is. And there was a subtitle in the summary in this GAO report, General Accountability Report. And for those of you not familiar with the GAO, it is the investigative organization of the United States Congress. If a member of the United States Senate or a member of the House of Representatives wants to get some facts, they go to the GAO. And here they said the DHS needs to assess risks and strengthen oversight functions. Needs to assess risks. This is where they pointed out that there are 10,000 schools authorized, think of that, authorized to petition to have foreign students come to the United States. And guess how many people are making sure that there's integrity? Very few, and there are 850,000 such students. Absolutely mind-boggling. Let me bring Mark on. I see he's on hold here. Mark Hager, hey. Are you there?
Yes, how are y'all?
Y'all are fine. Happy Friday, Mark.
Yes. I was rushing, made it in. I was going to text you that I'm in my driveway so you wouldn't panic.
I hope you didn't scare the cattle on the land next to your home.
Just a couple. Just a couple of them and a couple of deer taken for the trees.
You know, it's funny. I always like to tease Mark because he's a rebel from down south, and here I am.
Here we go.
Here we go. Yes, indeed. But you know, somehow the idea of a redneck and college professor don't mesh too well.
It takes all kinds.
Listen, if I don't give you abuse besides your wife and that line forming to the left, who else is going to?
Well, that's true. But I do send my real regrets up to you all for the defeat that happened. What was it, yesterday with the Detroit Tigers?
Yes, we did lose. But,
yes,
but you know what I'm about to say, don't you?
Well, you already know I'm a Yankee fan anyhow.
A rebel who's a Yankee fan, and I always wind up reminding him that it was the Yankees who won the Civil War.
I've always been a New York Yankee fan, as well as the Green Bay Packers.
Okay. Well, then you got your heart and your head in the right place, Mark.
Yes.
Why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about yourself? I told them that you're a history professor,
yep.
And I told them you're the co-producer of a wonderful documentary that's doing the premier grand opening a week from tomorrow, and I'm going to be there for it. I can't wait to hop on the airplane and fly south. What school do you teach at?
Well, I'm up in a little town called Hickory, North Carolina, at Lenoir Ryan University, and it's a Lutheran university. And, yes, I teach history. And just about every one of your history courses, but kind of specializing towards North Carolina history and colonial history, the Constitution, all of those really great subjects, I would call it. So I teach those. And then, yes, got involved with this whole border issue, and we were summoned over to look at some more of the production on it. And, you know, we left kind of laughing. We were at the episode where I think I told you last time I was on the radio, ironically, about how with Border Patrol cameras rolling and sensors up, that cartel operatives are now going out with blow torches and actually cutting out whole sections of the fence. I guess no one's watching the cameras and coming across, and they don't get caught. But we were at one episode to where the rancher got upset and was putting up a barbed wire to try to keep Mexican cattle out. They were upset that he was impeding illegal alien cows. And And the rancher was going, you have to be like in your line of work that you've done all these years. If you don't have a sense of humor, you would literally go nuts.
Well, I've always said that if I lose my sense of humor, my mind can't be far behind.
And these ranchers, you swear you just can't make this stuff up, to where they would leave these huge gaping holes, some of it done by the cartels and others done purposely by the Border Patrol, to impede the flow of flooding in the Sonora Desert. It's the Sonora Desert, and they're worried about flooding. So, and this is the U.S. government at work. And so they leave the fences up in case it rains during a three-month time period. So the gates are gaping wide. You can put a three-quarter ton dually pickup truck through them at high speed, and it wouldn't slow them up at all. And then his complaint was, and then all their cows from Mexico come in, and they carry diseases, all kinds of different things that you don't want in the cattle here in the United States. And I'm going, so it's kind of like tuberculosis and lots of other diseases that they're bringing into the U.S. with human transportation. And now we've got these Mexican cows that are hurting our own livestock, and they're yelling at them for putting fences up in the gaps that are being left by our own government. That's allowing these illegal alien cows in.
Well, you know, what was so remarkable, I was listening to the debate on Tuesday, and President Obama did his usual, and we hear this from the immigration anarchists all the time. Here we are, a short distance from Ellis Island, you know? I mean, we're supposed to, you know, the words Ellis Island is supposed to evoke all kinds of emotions, and we're supposed to get mushy. What people don't realize is Ellis Island, folks, was a quarantine station that was run by immigration in conjunction with the Public Health Service.
I knew you were going to bring that up. I knew when I saw that. When I saw that in debate, I went, oh, Mike Cutler is probably blowing his head completely off his shoulders.
Just about, and I was actually going to talk about it when I did my video for TalkBorder.com, but I kind of ran out of time because I got caught up a little bit talking about this guy, Nafis, who wanted to blow up the Federal Reserve Bank. But, you know, let's, you know, just take a second. The purpose of immigration laws is to protect the lives and jobs of Americans. And Ellis Island was all about that. And let me tell you, they would separate families. I've talked about this because I do a lot of public speaking around the country. And if you folks out there know of any opportunities, you can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. I'm always interested in trying to come out and engage in debate and discourse and conversation. It's in the First Amendment, not just freedom of speech, press, and religion, but the right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, if you don't have grievances, as Terry Anderson, the late radio talk show host, used to say, if you ain't mad, you ain't paying attention. And also the right to peaceably assemble so that you can have the discourse and the debate and the discussion. But when I listened to this, I did go crazy, and you're very, you know, prescient, I guess. You know where my head's at on the issue. Because when I've traveled around the country, people have told me stories about how families were split up at Ellis Island. Because in would come, you know, grandma and grandpa, and they would say, wait a minute, grandpa has tuberculosis, or grandma has malaria. And they would very unceremoniously give the family a choice. That family member of yours is not going to be let in come hell or high water talking about flooding. So you can either enter the United States without them and they will get back on the boat and go home, or you may return with them if you don't want to be separated. But make it clear in your own mind, this person's never going to be allowed into America because they suffer a dangerous disease. And people have told me about how their grandmother or their grandfather or great-grandmother or great-grandfather or uncle or whomever came to America and wound up getting a divorce, believe it or not, because their spouse could not get here and they couldn't remain back in their home country. And this wasn't about being mean-spirited. It's about not wanting innocent people in America to die or suffer from horrific diseases. I mean, thank God so many of those diseases are curable, but look at the resurgence of whooping cough. Look at the situation with drug-resistant tuberculosis. It is killing people. It's remarkable that AIDS, for whatever reason, has been taken off the list of diseases that would prevent an alien from being admitted into the United States. But please realize something, folks. This isn't about being mean-spirited. It's about protecting the lives of people who are in the United States. How many times, Mark, have you seen these horrible images where there's a house fire or a boat capsizes or a car catches on fire? And instinctively, the adult races into the situation, plucks their own child out, holding the child to their breast, races away from that burning building. If they're able to, they'll put the kid down with someone else and run back to try to help somebody else. But they feel that their first responsibility, sensibly, is to help their own child. Have you ever seen someone say to somebody, "What the hell is wrong with you? You saved your own child?" No, I mean, this is common sense. And governments, first and foremost, are supposed to protect the lives of their own citizens before they help anybody else. Is that an unreasonable position?
No.
I mean, you really have to wonder what's going on. You know, Mark and I spoke before because I know that you're in final editing of this fabulous film. I can't wait to see it. But, I was just thinking, and we were talking about this, when you have politicians get before the microphone and they say, "Well, I'm not going to enforce the immigration laws. We're going to give illegal aliens a pathway to citizenship." They may as well get in front of the cameras and say, "We don't care about your lives or your livelihoods. We don't care if you're out of work and you're losing your home to foreclosure. And we don't care if there are drug dealers in your neighborhood killing people."
Mm-hmm. Because you have that. You have that the people, I think people really, when we speak to them, it doesn't dawn on them that at the border, when you think of the border with Mexico, well, the Mexicans are controlling their border through drug cartels.
Yeah, they are.
And they're in charge of who's coming in, and so they could care less if you got people from Guatemala or Honduras or wherever in the world coming through, and they pay a coyote to bring them across, and they'll separate the families too. They'll separate them on purpose. And to get more money out of them, and leaving fathers with not knowing where their kids are, and who knows what they're doing with their daughters or their wives. And so because we won't close that border down adequately, you're really causing a lot more grief and pain to people. And then the guy that just attempted to blow up the Federal Reserve.
Yep.
Well, that's
I was just talking about it before you came on, yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's so...
Yeah, once aliens enter the United States, it's a free-for-all. You know, if you go to a nightclub, they have bouncers. If you're going to take an exam, you have proctors in the room to make sure everybody's on the level. But if you enter the United States, you can do whatever you want pretty much at this point.
It's like we are giving up our security just for the sake, I guess, of trade.
Trade and the profits to be had by illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, whether it's because the banks get to move the money or the corporations want the cheap labor or the immigration lawyers want that limitless stream of clients or the slumlords want to be able to cram people into their houses or the cities that are looking for the sales tax and the people that pay to go over the tolls and bridges. You know, it's all about cash. Mayor Bloomberg, and this is funny, it's a good segue, and that's the other article that I did for CAPS, and I think you folks will find it absolutely remarkable, but Mayor Bloomberg was railing, I mean absolutely beside himself, because the district attorney in the Bronx was refusing to prosecute people that trespassed into public housing. Now, I mean, I want you to stop and think about this one, because it blew my mind when I heard it on the radio. The article that I came up with is, New York's Mayor Bloomberg demands trespassers be prosecuted but ignores the dangers posed by immigration law violators. So he's upset that people are walking into housing projects, right, and they have no way of knowing who they are, and they're not supposed to be there. And he said, you know, if we don't go after these people, we're going to wind up with lawlessness, right? We're going to go back to the bad old days. In fact, his direct quote, this is it. This was in the article that appeared in the New York Post. If you want to bring crime back to New York, this is probably a good way to do it, His Honor fumed. And what was he talking about? Not automatically prosecuting trespassers who enter the buildings. He said, if you don't belong there and they arrest you, you need to be locked up. But if you trespass on America, according to Mr. Bloomberg, then we should give you the keys to the kingdom. Is that astonishing? And this is the guy who, through his sanctuary policies, has caused New York to become very congested. So what do you think Mayor Bloomberg's solution is for the congestion that the sanctuary policies has caused? He has been fighting repeatedly to implement congestion pricing so that if, as a New York resident, I pay city tax and all kinds of tax in New York as a New York resident, if I want to drive into Midtown Manhattan, Mayor Bloomberg wants me to pay, I don't know, $10 or $15 for the privilege of driving in my own city in my own car. Is that nuts?
Yeah, well, not just as crazy as not being able to buy a big gulp anymore.
Well, that's right. And you know,
we're
going
to worry about that one instead of somebody that's coming in trying to set up a 1,000-pound bomb to blow up the Federal Reserve. But
and with all the talk about too much salt and too much sugar in our diet, mm-hmm. no one's worried, apparently, if you look at the ads, because I don't see any commercials warning anybody, cocaine and heroin, the other powders.
If that had been real, and this was the one time that they caught the guy.
Yep.
If that had gone off, what would be on the news today?
I'll let you finish that sentence.
If a 1,000-pound bomb went off in New York City again and destroyed the Federal Reserve building, then what would the TV be like today?
Oh, I mean, forget about it. Are you kidding me? Do you know what kind of carnage you could be looking at? Mm-hmm. I've walked by that building. I was just mentioning it before you came on and joined me. I've walked by that building. You know, that building, by the way, was in the Die Hard movie with Bruce Willis.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, remember the whole thing where the guy was going to steal the gold? That's where it was, the Federal Reserve Bank. So when you look, they claim that they actually have more gold there than Fort Knox. Think about James Bond and Goldfinger. Mm. So the damage, the chaos, the carnage would have been unbelievable. Unbelievable. Mm. And you know, what would they have then said? Oh, he was legally admitted? See, the whole point is nobody wants to understand that just because someone has a visa, and we really need to examine the way visas are handed out, and the 9/11 commission, to which I provided testimony, did voice very serious concerns about that visa process. But just because you have a visa doesn't mean you can come to America and do what you want. A visa is an implied contract. And that's why they have different types of visas. They have tourist visas. Tourist visa says you can't commit crimes. Well, they all basically say you can't commit crimes here. But you can only stay for a six-month period. You're not allowed to work. There's very clear, you know, do's and don'ts. If you come on a student visa, you must attend the school. You must maintain an average. You must attend classes. You must carry more, I think, than 12 credits. It's laid out. It's an implied contract, you know? And when aliens fail to live up to the contract, there are no repercussions because this administration, the Obama administration, has made it clear to people around the world that no matter what you do to come to America, once you get here, unless you are convicted, not just commit, but are convicted of felonies or other serious crimes, we don't care if you never leave. We don't care if you work. We don't care if you go on welfare. We don't care if you go to a hospital and have us pay the bills for you. We don't care. You know, immigration has become a case of mind over matter. Obama doesn't mind, so what aliens do no longer matters.
Right. And they're lining up to, I'm sure the Obama campaign is bussing them in to go and vote. And these people they really don't understand what they're doing. And what they're doing is they're saying, come on in, blow up anything you'd like. Everything is ready for you. And sooner or later, we're going to hit the targets. And I guess America will wake up, I guess, their mindsets when it's too late.
By the way, are you still hosting your radio program?
We are, after the event is over with Saturday, then we are going back on live at that point.
Why don't you tell everybody where your program is, where it can be found?
It'll be at WSIC in Statesville, North Carolina.
And you stream as well?
Well, it's 1400 AM and WDSL 1520 in Mocksville, North Carolina.
And there's a website, right?
It'll up on the Yakka Valley Tea Party. It'll be up. you can link in to it from there as well as from WSIC Web.
Okay, well, there you go. That's probably the easiest way to do it, WSIC Web. And it's your mark on history. I know I've been on your program. I've been in the studio with you and your partner in crime, the other Mark.
Yep. Well, this time, the other person that's coming on board, since we're having to reshuffle how we schedule it because of my course load I have this semester, actually, Mike, if you remember Mike Prince, digital photographer, Big Mike?
Sure, I remember
Big Mike. He is actually a radio guy, and he's going to operate the controls.
Ah, well, you're going to have me come on so I can visit with you on your show.
You imagine how comical it was with Mark. Now you've got me and Mike, and if people who don't know him, when we get together, it can get very lively.
Well, you could call it a controlled riot or an uncontrolled riot.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, and I think a lot of people must be wondering. You know, we always hear about the border states, and, you know, my answer to that is we have 50 border states. But how in the world, I almost feel like I'm sounding like Lou Dobbs, how in the world did you wind up becoming involved with the immigration issue?
Let's see. Back in 2000.
How about for throwing you a curve out of left field?
About 2009, I was on a conference call, and there were a few coordinators out west that were on the conference call. And you know how, if you've ever been on a conference call, if you get in like a minute or two early while you're waiting on the host, you'll hear some other people talking. And every week for a while, they kept talking about another incident at this part of the border or that part of the border. And I would come in a little bit early, and I would ask questions about this. And they would say, you didn't hear this? And I said, we're in North Carolina. We haven't heard any of this kind of stuff. And that's really where it started. And I would
carry on. How long ago was this?
That was in 2009.
Wow.
And then, so I said, the only way I can, as a historian, figure this out, I'm going to have to do some research and try to find people that I considered the experts on the issue. And so first off, that put me in line with some of the border sheriffs, and I landed on Sheriff Deaver. It was
Larry
the one
Deaver.
I felt I could really talk with and get straight answers without any political side, just straight what is happening. And then he ends up coming to North Carolina, and I heard him speak again, and he finally said, just come on down. And so I got my first complete taste of it in 2010, and so that's where it began at that point. And then I can't even remember how in the world I got connected up with you.
A lot of people have that experience.
How in the world? I'm trying to think back. Where was it?
Well, it was probably through the immigration conference call, I'm going to guess, the Tea Party Coalition, I think.
No, but it was before that. It was, I mean, that's when I heard you.
Okay.
I already knew, and I could not, I can't remember the event that I went to. And I said, well, how do I get a hold of this guy? And so I considered, if you wanted to really get an idea of what's really happening and understand it from a simple level to as complicated as you want to make it, then Larry Deaver, of course, he died 2 weeks ago, would be the one that could fill you in exactly what's happening on the 1,900 miles of border with Mexico, and then you with every other part of the United States.
What were your thoughts? You know, part of what we did in this film, and I'm going to presume it's there, we were driving, and I was going to give you, if you remember, a sneak preview. My wife was in the car with us. And we, with all the other guys, and we were driving down Roosevelt Avenue at night. This is midnight. I mean, I want you to think, and I had no intentions of filming at this point. I just wanted you guys to get a sneak preview so you'd have some idea what we were going to do the next day. And lo and behold, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, the money wire services are going full tilt. People are waiting online. And you, I think, said to me, gee, we're going to start filming now. What did you think when you saw that madness?
Well, of course, you know, you've been here, and here, you know, our banks are very punctual. So at about 5:30, 5 o'clock during the week, maybe 6 p.m. on a Friday, everything closes down. And
I was going to say you roll the sidewalks in by 8 o'clock.
Right. The last person through town turns off the lights.
Exactly.
And And so I'm in this, in New York City, which, you know, I was really apprehensive about, but I tell you, I really enjoyed my time there. But going out there at night, I was trying to figure out who wakes up at 1 o'clock in the morning and says, gee, I forgot to wire some money.
That's a great question, isn't it?
And then that many people, I could see, you know, one person scampering, running in his, you know, in his pajamas out of wherever, you know, because this is really serious. I forgot to do something today, and thank goodness the bank is open still. But this was, it was like it was a normal business day with people in and out 24 hours a day, what, 7 days a week.
It gives no meaning to the city that never sleeps.
Right. But from 2, 3 in the morning?
Well, and it never used to be that way, but the people that are in there moving the money at that hour, you can make a presumption that the majority just consummated a drug deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the incredible part. See, everyone keeps thinking about California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, the border states. By the way, I sent you an article, and I'm going to do a commentary on it, about these people that were working baggage at JFK International Airport, which is another major port of entry. And then, you know, we of course drove by Port Newark with all the containers. See, folks, stuff and people don't just come into the United States across the Mexican border. They are pouring into America across the Canadian border, through the seaports, through international airports. So this goes on daily. So what people really need to understand, that I don't think a lot of people grasp this, is that whatever happens in California, well, you know, they say in Nevada, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens on the border does not stay on the border. It impacts our entire country.
No, we have...
You're getting hammered, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. We have sheriff's offices here that... have come on to where we've had, what, 15 major drug cartel busts here in North Carolina just this past year.
Wow, and that is really an increased pace.
And and they would be the first ones to point it out that North Carolina, you know, 2,000 miles from the so-called Mexican border, is, once you leave the border states, is one of the most heavily cartel-used highways in the United States. Coming right through us, and I guess they come through us so they can get to you.
They can get to us. Chicago, you know, I don't know if you saw the piece that I wrote, but there's the special agent in charge of DEA in Chicago is a guy by the name of Jack Riley. His prior assignment was to be the SAC, the special agent in charge, of the DEA office in El Paso, Texas. Now, I've been to El Paso, and I got to tell you, it's a frightening situation. They had some woman who got hit by a round that was fired apparently during a firefight in Ciudad Juarez, arguably the most violent city in all of Mexico, which really says something. And it was amazing. Napolitano said that there was no spillover violence, and this was just a freak bullet. Meanwhile, think of how many shootouts are now taking place in cities around the country. And Jack Riley was interviewed by Scott Pelley over at CBS News. We're not talking about some tabloid. This is CBS News. Tends to be very liberal, very, everything is fine, folks. You know, the soothing voice of everything is cool, nothing to see here, go back home. And there's Pelley interviewing Jack Riley, and Riley is talking about how neighborhoods in Chicago are resembling Mexican border towns with daily shootouts. And in fact, Nightline on ABC has been doing a series of stories about gang violence in Chicago. Now, not all the gangs are foreign nationals, but understand that the drugs are coming from outside the United States. There is no production of heroin or cocaine in the United States. And the other point, and you saw the debate, you know what I'm about to talk about, I think, when Romney raised the issue of Fast and Furious.
I know, he did.
Yes,
at least give him kudos for that.
Yes, but here's what he left out, and I wish he had the time, maybe if Candy Crowley wasn't interrupting him as much as she did. But you know, here's the deal. Those guns are coming back to America.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just Brian Terry, who was killed on American soil, that Border Patrol agent, that American hero, who had been in the military and served in the Middle East and was on the BORTAC team, the Border Patrol tactical unit, when he was shot in the back. But please understand something, folks. Those guns from Fast and Furious are going to make their way back into the United States, and here is why.
Well, It even goes farther than that.
Well,
they said on the news that Nicholas Ivey, the latest guy, killed similar condition, moonlit night, clear sky. And this Border Patrol agent that was shot point blank, and they say friendly fire, although Mexico had made two arrests. I don't know why they would make an arrest when they said it was just two guys stumbled into each other in the desert. But that's another story. But he joins, they said, 26 other Border Patrol agents who have been killed. When I looked it up, it's not 26. It's 53.
Wow.
We've lost 53 Border Patrol agents since amnesty was first passed in 1986. And if you look at the numbers of them, they used to compile them in a 10-year period. But now there's been so many, they have to do it year by year.
Well, and it's lie after lie, the old story that figures don't lie, but liars can figure. But here's what I want everybody to understand, because I saw this as an immigration agent. You know, I was fortunate that I got to go on all the rides. I was part of the drug task force for the last 10 years of my career. Before that, I spent 4 years with the Unified Intelligence Division at DEA. So although I was always an immigration agent, always carried the INS badge, I did a lot of work on narcotics trafficking. I also worked on terrorism investigations. What the cartels do, and it's Mexicans, and we find this from all the gangs, they will send their people from their home country to the United States to run roughshod over their operations, because these are violent people, and they are jealous about their money and the proceeds from their criminal activities like you cannot imagine. You know, these cartel leaders in Mexico were known, or in Colombia rather, were known for, like, if you went into this guy's house and let's say you signed a check and you walked out and took the guy's pen by accident, he'd have his guys go and either cut your arm off or shoot you in the head because you stole his pen. And the guy might have been worth $20 billion. So what they do to make sure that they control every penny, I mean every penny, is they send their henchmen to the United States, because the guy that they send here is well paid, but he knows that if he takes a nickel that's not his wife, his children, his mother, his brother, someone's going to die. And I assure you that when they send their henchmen here, they send them with guns so that they can protect the dope, and they can protect the money, and they can intimidate the hell out of people. And the tactics that are employed, you know, we hear this business, oh, the Latino vote wants open borders. You know, we used to see in Washington Heights, you know, we drove through Washington Heights, we saw more money laundering places. This was during the day. They will take control of an apartment of an elderly couple, hopefully they believe, with the cooperation of the couple. But they'll tell them, we're taking over your apartment for 4 days. Here's $5,000. Don't tell anybody. Just get out of here. And they do drug deals in that apartment for a four-day nonstop period. They bring in shifts of people doing the drugs, and bango, at 8 o'clock in the morning, whenever the agreed-upon time is, they clear out, they clean away any residue of whatever, and then they call the old couple up on their cell phone or whatever, and they say, okay, the coast is clear, you can go home now. Now, if they didn't want to do that, there's a good chance they'd be shot in the head and you'd never find their bodies. It's, again, what they offer in Mexico, silver or lead. Take the money or take a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening in the streets of New York City.
Yeah, it's happening across the United States. What do they call it? It's part of La Mordida?
La Mordida, the little bite is the bribe. But mm-hmm. but the whole deal is lead or silver. That's the translation. Meaning,
mm-hmm.
take a bullet or take the money. But one way or the other, we're going to get what we want. Either you take the money we're offering you, and then you go on your merry way, or we'll just shoot you and take your body and get rid of it. And
well,
in fact, in Mexico, they get rid of bodies by dumping them into vats of acid.
Well, in Mexico, both parties, the PRI and the PAN party, they're both in cahoots with the cartels, and that's been well documented. And at least with one of the things that we have heard from one DEA agent is that the recent change in the Mexican government is trying to break up the allegiance with the government with the Sinaloa cartel, which is now going to open up the corridors from West Texas to California into a renewed civil war between the Zetas and the Gulf cartels, trying to take back some of those corridors and to think that they're not going to be coming into the United States looking for their cartel operatives that are inside the United States.
I mean, look, this is going to be a bloodbath. realized that since Felipe Calderon took office, it was estimated in more than 50,000. And that's what they admit to. God knows,
yeah.
Some of these bodies will never be found.
Right.
50,000 acknowledged murders in that five-year period or so.
I mean,
this is carnage that's beyond belief, and it's violent. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Italian mob, but, you know, everybody got all excited. Yay, the FBI dismantled the Italian mafia and so forth. Those guys played by rules. You don't shoot police. You don't kill somebody in front of their wife. The wife doesn't take a bullet unless she's somehow directly involved in the crimes. And there was a rule book that they played by. The Mexican cartels have a rule book, too. The rule book says you go after the children, you go after the women, you mutilate, you rape, you torture, you do it as grotesquely as possible, you chop off the heads, and you leave bodies hanging from bridges with graffiti sprayed on the naked body, warning that that will happen to them if they interfere.
Yeah, except for one agent is saying that now people are just disappearing left and right.
Yeah, well, the message
they're not really mutilating
there.
As much. They just people just flat are disappearing from California all the way out through Mexico to where they, and you'll see it in the news where somebody's disappeared here, somebody's disappeared there, and so it's just a thing that we are opening ourselves to. And
that's why when Napolitano says the borders are secure, my question is secure or secure enough or what?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if our borders were secure, folks, the drugs would not be coming here. The violence would not be coming here. They would not have to admit that hundreds of American cities have become infested by the cartels. And then you cannot possibly forget that image of President Obama standing there in El Paso opposite
right.
Ciudad Juarez joking mm-hmm. about how the Republicans want alligators in the moat.
It should be crocodiles.
Well, it should be.
Alligators here in the southeast, they won't really bother you unless you do something really stupid. But a crocodile, now that's that. Now that would be a little more interesting.
I always love your perspectives, Mark.
Yeah, if we could put crocodiles out there, you know that. Well, I've heard people out there say that everyone knows here in the southeast that. You know, an alligator is not going to do a whole lot, but a crocodile, how do you want to put it? They don't really care what it is that they eat.
Right.
They're non-discriminatory. They'll take anybody that comes across the border.
They don't profile, huh?
Right, they don't profile. They just...
they just eat. They just
they
chow
just
down.
An alligator will just look at you.
Yeah, but a crocodile just chow down.
Right.
I like that. I actually don't like that, but that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness. You know, we're getting to the top of the hour. I got to tell you, it's great having you on my program. I'm certainly excited about this project. And again, the name of the film that's coming out is?
It'd be Invasion Freedom Under Fire 2.
And there's a website up for it, I guess, or will be a website up?
There will be. And, you know, the kind of a hodgepodge team of... How do you want to put it? I put it out in the documentary. It says we got a Texas businessman, sort of, digital photographer, a liberal arts professor, which would be me, and then another school principal. And we came together to do this. So we couldn't figure out what to call ourselves. So we finally, someone else mentioned and that we decided to call it the American Security Coalition.
I love it.
So... We will build some type of website up for it, and
I can't wait for that to happen. And when that happens, I'm going to at the very least do a Skype with you at talkwater.com and bring you back onto my radio program, and we're going to post it because I want to make sure that everybody gets to see the DVDs. And my understanding is you plan to distribute them nationally.
Yeah, we are going to try. And we've got some people that have contacted us that would be willing to help as donors to try to make it happen. To as soon as we're waiting on our first master copies to be completed, and then they're going to go out to these people who are willing to help. And if that happens, then we're going to get them mass produced immediately. You know, maybe as early as Monday or Tuesday of next week. to get them out all across the United States to all groups interested. Many of them, of course, have a Tea Party background or affiliates across the nation. That's 3,400 plus groups just in Tea Party Patriots. And then it goes to, you know, wherever, other groups that have asked.
So this isn't about, you're not looking to buy a Ferrari and make a gazillion dollars. You're just looking to get a message out there so that
That's
people
it.
Understand what we're confronting.
No, and we have just a donation system. If we can help recoup some of the costs, great. But
That's
like
important.
You said, the major importance is just to get the message out, because it won't make any difference if we make $10 here or there if we don't have a nation in another year.
Boy, isn't that the case. And by the way, folks, again, I'm going to tell you, and you know, you can reach out to me, and I'll reach out to Mark. And if you see the film, you want one of us to come out, if arrangements can be made, I'm certainly willing to come out and talk to the folks who see these films. We really and truly have got to understand what is happening and what is not happening and what it really means. This is not about going after people because they're mowing lawns or washing dishes. This is not about going after defenseless people. This is not about race. This is not about religion. The immigration laws are blind, completely 100% blind about race, religion, and ethnicity. If those laws were about discrimination, I never in a million years could have enforced those laws. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. Racism is something that I think is a scourge. You know, my kids may have heard me use some four-letter language, but they've never heard the N-word come out of my mouth.
Right.
Because those are the real dirty words. I don't get excited about body parts or bodily functions, and there's one particular activity that's the reason we're all here, and probably the activity everybody wants to engage in. That's not nearly as vile a word in my world as the N-word or any sort of word like it. So this is really about understanding the role that immigration and borders are supposed to play, again, for two primary objectives, to protect the lives and livelihoods of American citizens. That's what it's about.
Well, this is Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution. It's Title 8 under immigration. Oh, what's the term? What's the big term for it? Immigration
and Nationality Act.
Yeah,
it's the Immigration and Nationality Act.
And we're not looking at, you know, trying to stop the flow of somebody wanting to make a better life for them in America. What we are trying to wake people up is that we've got Hezbollah now coming in. We know it. It's documented. Hezbollah is now here using those same corridors. We've got Iranian Quds forces that is now being figured while we were down there that is coming through right there. Then you've got right in New York City a guy just this week that tried to decimate the Federal Reserve building.
By the
and
way, the Quds, for those who are not familiar with them, are the shock troops, Iranian shock troops, and they are flying every week from Tehran, Iran, to Caracas, Venezuela, and I assure you they are not coming here for R&R.
And that has been documented. You don't even have to go to some sort of right-wing something.
No,
You can just go online and see where people are reporting this.
There was a Pentagon report about this, and it became an article in the Washington Times. The United States Pentagon open-source report talked about Quds forces coming to Venezuela. So this isn't black helicopters or flying saucers or people running around with tin hats on.
This is somebody who's saying, how can I blow up the United States and make the great Satan go away, in their viewpoint?
Yep, Paul Ryan made the point about how they tried to kill the Saudi ambassador in Washington. Those folks were connected to the Quds. I wish he had made that point.
What they're waiting for, we have no idea. You know,
I have a hunch, and I think what they're waiting for is if we move on their nuclear program, which I think is probably a matter of inevitability. I don't think it's a matter of if, it's only a matter of when. And I think the day that that happens, a lot of stuff is going to start to blow up in the United States.
So when you see people going to go and vote, and you see them with a big Obama sticker or something somewhere, and you ask them, don't you care about the security of the United States? And if they say, well, we love illegal aliens, then, well, I don't know what you would do at that point. But I don't know if you would just shake your head or saying you really have no clue what is happening.
Well, you know, and what's so remarkable, folks, that's why truth is so important, and that's why discussion is so important, and that's why the Founding Fathers were so amazing. I did a debate at Central Washington University with Jim Gilchrist, and Jim is an interesting character. I don't know that it was so much a debate because we both were there advocating for secure borders, but there were a lot of protesters, and they were screaming and ranting and raving and yelling at Jim, and he was screaming back, and that's not my style at all. But by the time I got done speaking, by the time I made my points as clearly as I knew how, the protesters, with only the exception of one professor who was furious that I basically had gotten to him and he went storming out of the room, but there were between 40 and 50 protesters, an audience of over 500 people, and those protesters came up to hug me, ask for my autograph, ask me if I would take a picture with them. And they all voiced the same shock because they told me they thought they understood the issue, and suddenly they realized they had been lied to.
And, you know, it's sad because it's the American psyche. You know, I love this nation. I defended it in the military myself, too. Mm-hmm. But it's almost as if here in America, they know that we are naive around the world, that we really do like the people who are being pushed by other nations. We like the underdog. We used to be that way for eons here. And that so we think we got to just have all of these people looking to pick tobacco in eastern North Carolina. Right? And they won't look at what's really happening until we see New York City blown up, Washington, D.C. blown up, or something else. And then by that time,
it's too late.
You know, it's just so much we have
and
to
you know,
do.
By the way, and you know me with my wacky analogies, but imagine if you were in a lifeboat. Imagine you were on an ocean liner, the Titanic, whatever, pick one. And all these people are thrashing about in frigid, shark-infested waters. You see blood everywhere. And you want to help them. And you look around in your lifeboat, and there's maybe one or two empty seats and hundreds of people in the water. What do you think is going to happen to that lifeboat if those hundreds try to get into the boat? Everyone's going down.
Yeah.
America is not unlike that lifeboat. When we have the kind of unemployment rate that we have, when we have the kind of poverty rate that we have, you know, part of America's national security rests on its economic solvency. Without money, we can't accomplish anything. We've gone from the gold standard to the Parker Brothers standard.
Right.
I don't know any other way of putting it. We just keep on cranking out more and more money. I don't know why we bother worrying about counterfeit money, because we're counterfeiting it ourselves for all intents and purposes at this
point.
The
free parking won't be there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we need to wake up that actions have consequences, and failures to act can also have consequences. You know, I had prostate cancer about 12 years ago, and I had a choice. I could live in denial for a short period of time, say, you know what, the hell with it, this is too tough to contemplate, I'm just going on a cruise. Had I done that, I wouldn't be here now, and that would be bad because I haven't aggravated my quota yet, but I am working on it. Or you could do what I did and say to my wife, okay, let's focus on figuring out what the best course of treatment is to deal with this disease that's trying to kill me. Today, folks, America is suffering from cancer. It is the threat of terrorism. It is the violence and the narcotics that go with the violence of the cartels. It's America's soft underbelly, the economy that is evaporating, and Americans unable to support themselves adequately.
Yeah.
These are all diseases that can bring this country down, bring it to its knees. And let me tell you, if we're not out there, and America has its issues, we didn't always do the right thing. No country does. No person does. I don't know anybody who has a halo floating over their head, nor is there any country that does. But if you put America's track record up there with all the other countries in the world, I'll take America. Thank you. And if we're not out there to influence the course of events in this violent, screwed-up world with limited resources, there's all kinds of issues that are developing. If America's voice and America's force for good is silenced, I don't even want to imagine where the rest of the world will wind up. You know, when you're on an airplane, they tell you that if the oxygen masks come down, put yours on first so that you don't become part of the problem, so that you're able to then help the people around you. America needs the oxygen, and that means that Americans need to get back to work, that America has to protect itself against terrorist attacks and transnational gangs. They had this former advisor on who had advised six secretaries of state and said, first and foremost, the mission of the government, the mission of the State Department, both, is to secure the country, protect the homeland. If you can't do that, nothing else you do matters. Well, how on earth do you protect the homeland when we have millions of people in our country whose presence is not recorded, whose true identities, affiliations, and backgrounds are unknown and unknowable, and as a consequence, their ultimate reasons for being here are unknowable. You know, one of the things I do is participate in the speaking events for a group called L&L Freed Associates in Washington. It's a speakers bureau. And I very often address military leaders and people in the intelligence agencies. And I was in front of a bunch of Air Force generals and colonels, and I said to them, folks, can you tell me why we still have a military? And I thought they were going to rip my head off because, boy, that's a hell of a question to ask the military brass. And I said, before you go to the sidearms, understand that I have nothing but total respect and admiration. I'm in awe. You want to talk about shock and awe? I'm in awe of our men and women in the military. But isn't it true that your primary mission is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible? Well, every head in the room, almost like bobbleheads, nodded in agreement. I said, well, how the hell can you carry out your primary mission under the current set of circumstances? Well, let me tell you, I didn't get any arguments, but I did get quite a few of those colonels and generals coming up to me after the meeting, after my presentation, and say to me, Mr. Cutler, you're 1,000% right. This is what we're fighting for, folks. If you want to know why every Friday night I get on this program and why every Wednesday evening I head into Manhattan and walk into a studio and tape talkborder.com and why I write for capsweb.org, it's to try to provide information that incredibly is almost impossible to find in the mainstream media. I don't care if you want to talk about any network at all. These stories are being reduced to 3-minute sound bites, and it doesn't work. The beauty of radio, and you're a radio guy, Mark, you know this, is that you can have an honest-to-God conversation. And by the way, working with you on this film was an absolute privilege, and I'm honored to be part of it. And the way you're doing it, not looking for profit or glory, but looking to protect this nation, I will tell you, you're serving America, and you're serving the American people better than our own government. What do you think of that statement?
Well, there are so many other people who've come up and come forward, and many of them, well, I don't know how many times, either in law enforcement or other military veterans, you know, will come up and thank you. And you know, we're just trying to do what we can to help those that came before us. They talk about the greatest generation, you know, and
we're liable to wind up the last generation.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's our turn to stand up, and we can't just sit around and look back at those who faced the Holocaust and who faced the beaches of Normandy to try to stop the Holocaust, and then ANZO,
yep,
and then Iwo Jima, and then turn around and say, well, you know, we're too busy right now. We'll worry about it later.
Can you call me next week?
it's our turn, and so we've got to do it. So.
Well, I tell you, I am so much looking forward to seeing you. I think of Mark's house as the Red Roof Inn. I'm going to paint the roof on your house for you.
All right.
I just couldn't resist.
Mm-hmm. It would look,
I got to
really
tell you, it was absolutely a joy. I feel as though we've adopted each other. I could not have felt more welcome staying in your home the last time I was in North Carolina. And it's a beautiful home. So I want to thank you, Mark, for joining me tonight. I want to thank you for all that you're doing, by the way. You're not just teaching history. I hope you're helping to write history, to change the direction that America is going in at this very dangerous time when America does stand at crossroads.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. It sure is.
So I thank you for that. And I thank you for all of your efforts. I'm certainly looking forward. I'm looking at my airplane ticket. It's printed out here, and I'm waiting to
mm-hmm.
head for the airport a week from today. But I just want to put out those three plugs again, because I'd be remiss if I didn't. Folks, please go to michaelcutler.net, go to talkborder.com. Hope you like what's up there. I addressed that last debate and my concerns about that bombing plot in Lower Manhattan. And certainly to my friends in Santa Barbara, California, I hope they're listening, at CAPSWeb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. They do a great job. They really need to hear from you, and if you could help them out, that would be a good thing, too. We're trying to get a good, solid message out there to make people understand that this isn't about xenophobia, not at all. It's about common sense. And a final thought, as I say xenophobia, you know, Arlen Specter just passed away, and I didn't realize he was the architect of the single bullet theory when President Kennedy was assassinated with the Warren Commission. But, you know, he and I locked horns when I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And in a moment of brain spasm, he didn't use the word xenophobia, but said that those of us that wanted to, you know, enforce the laws were suffering from exophobia. And it took every ounce of self-control, not trying to be totally irreverent, and say to him, Senator Specter, be rest assured, I have no fear of the letter X. But he has passed away, and he certainly was an interesting character, dedicated American. But on the immigration issue, I really think he got it wrong. And, folks, we got to make it right. And that's what this is all about. That's what Mark's efforts are about, and that's what my efforts are about. I would remind you that democracy is not a spectator sport. Get involved. The election's coming. Don't be fearful about confronting your neighbors pleasantly. Don't go out there and beat anybody up. I don't want to be responsible for any black eyes or missing teeth. But really and truly, folks, the founding fathers understood the need for discourse, debate, discussion. It's right in the First Amendment. The right to peaceable assemblage is the words in the Constitution. Am I correct, history professor?
Yes.
I got the words right, yes.
And
that's what it's about.
And the peaceable exercise thereof.
And so it was about debate and discourse. Mm-hmm. We have become a bunch of, in the words of General Patton, yellow bellies. We're afraid to speak our mind. And we should never be fearful of that. It is our birthright as Americans. Mark Hager, I hope you have a terrific weekend.
It's a busy one. We have a 50th wedding anniversary for my in-laws tomorrow, and so they're all waiting for me to get off the phone so I can help with all of our barbecuing. You know,
well,
here,
wish them the best. I was scared. I thought you were going to tell me it was you, and I didn't think you were born 50 years ago.
Well, you know, it's in the South, so I have to say, you know, that means pork when you barbecue here, so.
Well, that's okay. I can deal with that.
Mm-hmm. So the normal stay is that stay outside and grill for 7 to 12 hours. But
wow.
Then it's really good.
Now, that sounds like something that I would see on Drivers, Dine-ins, was it Drivers,
Diners,
Drive-ins, and Dives,
mm-hmm.
when you visit those pulled pork places and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we always laugh when we hear people say that they're barbecuing and we go over and they've got hamburgers or hot dogs. We're going, that's not barbecuing, that's grilling. Barbecue.
Well, I'm looking forward to some of that down south food when I get there next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's always good.
Well, I appreciate being on the show, and you have to remember, you say all these good things, but I have only been in this immigration issue for about 2.5 years, and you were fighting it for, 30 years plus? So.
Yep. Believe it or not, this is scary. I was sworn in as an immigration inspector in the first week of October. Are you ready for this one? 1971.
Oh, I was going to think 1912 or something.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. Just call me Rodney. I'm getting no respect today anywhere.
1971.
Listen, go have a wonderful barbecue. Save some for me.
Okay, I sure will.
Tell Debbie, your delightful wife, and your kids I say hi. I'm going to guess both of your daughters are there tonight.
Yes.
Well, tell them all I say hello. I look forward to seeing you next Friday.
And
I thank you for all that you're doing.
Okay, well, thank you. And you
all
take
right,
care and
you know,
tell everyone out there to stay safe. But this time, start looking around and stop acting like if you don't look at it, it's not there. Because it's here. It's everywhere, and it's time to act.
I couldn't have said it better myself. You're right. And I know you're certainly living up to your own words. And again, I want you to know how much I really appreciate working with you, having you on my show, but really working with you on that documentary. I can't wait to see it. You got to send me a copy as soon as it cools down, and you can put it into an envelope.
Okay, I will.
Excellent. Well, folks, we're going to wrap up this program. Again, I thank you all for listening. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend coming up, no matter what you do. But please, please get involved. Speak to your neighbors. Have those conversations. Make sure that you're able to vote in just a couple of weeks now. This may be the most important election that we will see in our lifetimes. It's just a couple of weeks away. Remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Won't be here next week. I'll be in North Carolina with my friend Mark Hager, but I will be back the week after that. But I do a plan to try to have a guest host fill in. I will email those of you on my list, and you'll be able to see that on my website at michaelcutler.net. And again, go to those websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, talkborder.com. Good night, everybody.